Okay, going to talk a little bit about Hebrews tonight, mostly just an introduction. Ted and I are going to do the same tag team thing that we did on Romans. We'll share the teaching back and forth. Romans, as we saw, was a book that was written to help Gentile Christians deal with what they were hearing and deal with the suggestion that they needed to keep more parts of the old law. Now, it had some import for the Jews as well. Of course, Paul tells the Jews, don't be doing that. Don't be telling people that they have to keep the old law. Don't be telling people that they have to establish their own righteousness, because righteousness comes from God. So it had a lot to say to the Jews, but the book of Romans is really a book that's written to Gentiles. At least that's my understanding of the book of Romans. The book of Hebrews, on the other hand, is a book that, as I see it, is written to equip Jewish converts who are going to go back home for Passover Seder, and they're going to sit around the table with their parents, and their parents are going to say, I can't believe that you've left your faith. And they needed to know how to respond to that. That has some import for us as well, because he's going to talk about what it means if we understand who Jesus really is, what it means if we understand what the law really is, and how that's going to impact the way that we live our lives. But I think this book was written kind of as a companion to the book of Romans. They're kind of like bookends. Romans is written to the Gentiles, Hebrews is written to the Jewish converts. I have no idea who wrote it. It's one of those letters unusual in the New Testament that doesn't tell us anything about who the author is. He never identifies himself. There's a statement by Origen that I think is probably sums up the situation pretty well. It says, only God knows who wrote the book of Hebrews. And for the rest of us, in some ways, it really doesn't matter who wrote it. It was written by inspiration anyway. So it came from God, and you had individuals who wrote it down. There have been a lot of suggestions. Clement of Alexandria. Clement was an elder in the church in Alexandria, and he thinks, or suggested, that he thought Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. Now, that has pretty much carried the day, and most people that you'll talk to kind of have this feeling that Paul probably wrote it. I have a particular feeling about this book, and I can't tell you exactly why, but I think it just sounds like something that John wrote. Because when I read the first chapter of John and then read the first chapter of Hebrews, they sound so similar that I kind of think that maybe it was written by John. I'm not enough of a linguist to know how that ought to be analyzed, but Tertullian, who was a second century Christian, he thought Barnabas wrote the book of Hebrews. Luther, Martin Luther, much later, he was of the impression that Apollos wrote the book of Hebrews. There have even been some suggestions that it was written by Priscilla and Aquila. fame. So I really don't know. It would make sense that it would have been written by any of those people, but I just don't know. Yeah.
Down at the bottom is a highlighted.
Yeah.
And that verse seems to say that it was passed on by the apostle to whoever wrote it.
Or it was passed on by those who heard him, who heard Jesus. And so, yeah, it would have included the apostles for sure.
Yeah, but it was not the apostles themselves, it was like the next generation.
Yeah. In you see, that has been suggested as a reason why Paul didn't write the book. And I'm not sure, maybe we're misinterpreting that statement in chapter 2 at verse 1, because Paul had a revelation from God, and that wouldn't mitigate against it, that revelation being confirmed by those that actually heard him, heard Jesus. But then there's the Apostle Paul says, I didn't receive this of men. I didn't get it from men. I didn't even confer with men. That's Galatians, the first chapter, verses 11 and 12. So I just don't know. But it was, at any rate, the book was written by inspiration. I'm convinced. Okay? And if it was written by inspiration, then it really wouldn't matter a lot who wrote the book. It's just an interesting kind of conundrum. And most of the time people say, well, Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. I don't know whether he did or not. It is an extremely well-written book. And Paul could easily have written it because he had an intimate familiarity with all things Jewish. I mean, he was a Jew, okay? So it, because it sounds so much like Romans, which we know Paul wrote, it wouldn't be surprising if Paul wrote Hebrews. Any other thoughts about authorship? We just don't know much about it. But I guess in the long run, it probably doesn't matter very much. The people that received this book were as I understand it, and as I kind of conceptualize this book, they were Jewish converts. And they needed to have their faith stored up, and they needed to know how to respond when their parents said to them, yeah, I have a priest. He's right down the street, and I can go talk to him, and I can make sacrifices, and he'll help me make my sacrifices. And your priest is gone. You know, your priest is in heaven. What good is that? Now, none of us come from a Jewish background. I don't think. Does anybody come from a Jewish background? I don't think so. So that kind of attachment to a priest that lives just down the street who helps you make sacrifices is something that I really don't understand very well. I come from a faith tradition that never felt that way about priests. Now, that kind of feeling is not unknown even today. I've talked with some people who, in fact, they were Mormons. They came to the door and they said, wouldn't it be great if we still had the priesthood? And they, of course, think that they still have the priesthood. I said, no, I don't see any benefit to it. And we talked a little bit about Hebrews, and they weren't interested. And so didn't get very far. My understanding, although I can't speak to it directly, my understanding is that in the Catholic tradition, there's a more of a reliance on a priest, and that priest helps you to understand. Now, that's charitable. People that are more cynical about it say the priest is going to tell you what it says. I don't think most Catholics approach it that way, but and we of course have to be careful of that. We have to develop our own understanding of what the Bible says. Yeah, Bill.
Understanding that Catholics are not encouraged to read the Bible, to take what the priest says.
Well, yeah, in some ways that's probably true. I had a Bible class one time, a Bible discussion with a Catholic priest and a person that worshiped where he was serving. Now, this Catholic priest had been a prelate in South America, so he's a pretty high-ranking Catholic priest. Anyway, he came to our study, and he was carrying this beautiful leather-bound book. And I thought, wow, that is a great Bible. And I fancy myself a collector of books. I don't have the means to collect the books that I would like to. But I made some comment to him. I said, where did you find that book? Is it in English? And he said, oh, that's my missal. And so he was showing me in this missal, and it's a series of selected readings, one for each day. But I said, well, how would you, if you wanted to look up Romans 12, 1 and 2, how would you do that? He said, oh, I never do that. And I thought, that's really weird. From my, you know, faith tradition, my tradition says you search the scriptures to see if the things that people tell you are true. You don't take their word for it and then assume that everything they say is true. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to remember that the Catholic Church always said that the priests, when they spoke in Latin and they read Latin and the common people couldn't, that was one of the ways that they learned that they could control people.
Yeah.
And so it still comes down to this day that it's not important what the Bible says, it's important what the priest says and what the says.
Yeah, and an uncharitable view of Judaism would say the same thing. It's what the priest tells you. It's not what you can read. It's what the priest tells you, it says. And there was a time in the American colonies when the colonists were getting a little uppity, and the British decided that what they were going to do was recall all of their preachers from the American colonies. Now, if they recalled all of the preachers, you couldn't be born, you couldn't die, and you couldn't get married, because that's what preachers are good for, hatching, matching, and dispatching. And so they threatened to withhold the priests from the American colonies, thinking that that would be a way to control the colonists. And the colonists said, well, we don't need the priests anyway. We can read it for ourselves. And thus was born the American Restoration Movement. Okay. So, I think all of those things are kind of built into this book, but they're things that are true by extension. It's not the purpose of the writing of this. The whoever wrote the book of Hebrews was not trying to deal with Catholicism, nor was he trying to deal with Mormonism. It just, Catholicism didn't exist. So he's not trying to deal with that. He's trying to deal with some very real issues that they faced. And the issues that they faced are, in many ways, the kinds of issues that get repeated throughout history, throughout all time. So, back to sola scriptura, Bible only. Now, whoever it was that was getting these letters probably was personally acquainted with the person that was writing the letters. And that would make some sense if it was, in fact, Barnabas that had written the book, because he traveled with the apostle for so many of his journeys, and they would go typically first into the synagogues where they would find Jews. And so most of these people, Jewish converts throughout the entire known world, would have been at least familiar in some ways with Barnabas. And they might have been familiar with Apollos. I just don't know that he traveled as extensively. I do know that he was a man who was eloquent, and so it wouldn't surprise me that he would write a book like this. John, of course, traveled extensively, and they could have been familiar with him that way. But the recipients were probably Jews. Gentiles got to read the book as well, just like the Jews got to read the book of Romans. When it was written, about the only thing that I can say for sure is that it had been written by the year 96. And the way that I know that it was written is Clement of Rome, who is, again, an elder in the church in Rome, writes a letter in 96 and quotes Hebrews. So I'm sure it was written prior to 96. Some folks think it was probably written prior to AD 70, because there's no mention of the destruction of Jerusalem. And if this is a book that was written to the Jews, then you would think that that's a major event in Jewish history. So you would think there'd be some passing mention of it in one way or another. And if you look at the way that the writer talks about the priests and making sacrifices, it still seems like they're making sacrifices. And that would, of course, have come to an end when Jerusalem was destroyed. They couldn't make sacrifices, couldn't do it at the door of the temple, and that's where the priests were involved in making sacrifices. Remember, priests didn't make your sacrifice. They helped you make your sacrifice. So when you came and brought your lamb to the door of the temple, you didn't hand the lamb to the priest, and then the priest takes it in the other room and he makes your sacrifice. That's not the way it worked. When you came and offered your lamb for the Passover, you held the lamb in your arms and the priest slit its throat. Okay? So it wasn't some sterile kind of sacrifice. You were holding an animal that was going through the throes of death. This animal is shivering. This animal is clearly in pain. And you understand that because you're holding the animal. The priest didn't make your sacrifice. They offered sacrifices. They did make one sacrifice that nobody else participated in. That was a sacrifice on the Day of Atonement. And they did that for all of the people. But, and they, of course, made sacrifices for themselves. But that was just an understanding that they were a person like everybody else's person. So, apparently the priests are still offering sacrifices. And if they, these Jewish converts were still living in Palestine, it was probably written prior to the beginning of the Jewish wars that the Romans fought. And again, it's because there's, in my mind, there's no mention of the Jewish wars. So it just makes sense to me that probably written sometime around 63, 65. You remember this would be about 30 years after the church has begun, be about 20 years after the Gentiles have been brought in. Okay. So what's going on at this period of time? I'll just kind of assume that it was written in the 60s. What was going on in the Roman Empire? Well, there were no significant military actions during this decade. There were a couple of little uprisings that the Roman army put down really quickly. Economically, in 92, the Flavian Palace is built or is finished. This was built by Domitian. He's the last of the Flavian Empire emperors. And the building of the Flavian Palace just about ruined the Roman economy. So they just really went into debt to build this palace. They even established a committee, and we're familiar with committees and how they work. They established a committee to look at the high rates of taxation that were falling on the poor Roman citizens. Yeah, Bill.
Didn't you or Ted say just a week or two ago that Roman citizens didn't pay taxes?
Well, that's a good point. The Roman citizens didn't pay taxes, but remember, there weren't very many Roman citizens, even in the city of Rome. Yeah, the vast majority of them did not have citizenship. They lived there, they paid taxes, but they were suffering horrible economic times because of the extensive building that had been going on in the city of Rome itself. Yeah.
You said, or somebody said at one point, that there could have been up to 50% of the city was slaves.
Yeah, that's true.
Slaves weren't paying taxes,
right? Yes.
They had to pay taxes.
Yeah, they had to pay taxes. Yeah, Bob.
Rome always levied taxes against other countries that they had overrun.
Yeah, that's true.
Which amounted, I'm sure, to a great amount.
That's true. This is not unheard of in that kind of an economy. In Islamic countries, they tax non-Muslims at a much higher rate than they do Muslims. Now, even the Roman citizens, they didn't pay taxes, but they still had to pay certain fees in order to live in Rome. So the economy is just in a terrible way. Nerva's expenses drained the economy. And Nerva is the emperor immediately before Domitian. And it was once suggested that it necessitated the formation of this committee that was trying to lower the taxes. Now, this is not, you know, the Jews would have been familiar with this. Remember, that's really what led to the split between the northern 10 tribes and the southern 2 tribes. Jeroboam wanted to raise taxes. Rehoboam in the south said, I'm not going to raise taxes. And so you had this split even in Jerusalem, even among the Jews. Now, that had been many years before this, but that's something that the Jewish people would have been intimately familiar with. According to a lot of historians, Jews and Christians were heavily persecuted toward the end of Domitian's reign. Book of Revelation, many suggest, was written to deal with the persecutions under Domitian. It's not a perspective that I take on the Book of Revelation, but a lot of people suggest it. According to Albert Barnes, who wrote a commentary on Hebrews, there were three Roman emperors who were well known for persecuting the Christians: Nerva, Domitian, and Nero. And there are a lot of historians who live in the first and second centuries who write about that persecution. Domitian actually changed his mind. And it was during Domitian's reign that many of the Jews who had to leave Rome and had to leave Jerusalem were able to come back. And so that's one of the things that I think prompted the writing of the Book of Romans. The Jewish Christians are coming back home and they find out that the churches have been populated mostly by Gentiles. And so they're hard for them to deal with what these Gentiles are doing. Well, same difficulty during the time of Domitian. Most of the accounts of persecution under Domitian are anecdotal. We don't know a lot about it. So we just accept that there was a degree of persecution. There are some things that are written during this period. Josephus writes extensively. So he writes the Antiquities of the Jews. If you're interested, it's a history of the Jewish people. It's fascinating to read. It's just an incredible book. He also wrote against Appian. That's a defense of Judaism as a religion and a philosophy. And it too is really interesting to read. And then he wrote an autobiographical account, The Life of Flavius Josephus, when he details some things that happened during his life. Tacitus is another historian that you might hear about. He wrote several works that deal with people outside of Rome. He wrote about Germanic people. And, you know, lest we think that Rome was everything that was going on, that the work by Tacitus will remind us that there was a much broader world. And I started to do some reading about what was going on in China at the time. There, China has a well-developed history, and it's easy to look at what was going on in China. But many of the names and those kinds of things just aren't as familiar to us. But just never forget that this, the things that happened to Christians and Jews happened against the backdrop of a much broader sense of world history. And it's I think, important for us to keep that in mind as we think about the things that we read. The purpose, again, I think this is the effort to shore up the faith of Jewish converts. Doesn't want them to leave the religion. This is a book that encourages them not to go back to the old law. Okay? Romans, because it's a book written to Gentiles, talks about law, but it talks about law very differently than Hebrews does. Romans, I think, talks a lot about Eden law. The book of Hebrews talks about the Mosaic law, the law given by Moses. So, key word in the book of Hebrews is what we have is better than. It's better than the angels, that Jesus is better than the angels. We have a better hope than the Jews did. We have a better covenant than the Jews did. And we've talked about that on a lot of different occasions. You know, that the Jews lived under a system where they were told you must give X number of dollars, or not X number of dollars, but you must give X percentage of whatever you have to God, and you were required to pay taxes, you were required to pay fines. Sometimes it was based on the wealthy paid more, the poor paid less, but there were times when everybody paid the same. That kind of a covenant appeals to some people. It is a little bit easier in some ways to deal with that kind of a covenant, the God saying, give me out of your blessings that which is appropriate. That's a lot harder in some ways, because you don't have it, it's not possible to calculate the amount that it would take for a Christian to be a Christian. Like, you can calculate the exact amount that it was would have been required for a Jew to be a Jew. It was about 33% of his income. Okay? And that didn't include all of the sacrifices. But in some ways, that was a lazy man's covenant. We have a better covenant. And we have better sacrifices than they did. Of course, the Jews had to rely on the blood of bulls and goats. And we know that that's just not enough. We intuitively understand that. If I was to kill Andrew and then say, it's okay, I'll sacrifice my dog, you would look at that and say, that's not the equivalent of Andrew. I'll sacrifice my bull. And you'd still say, that's not the equivalent of Andrew. I'll sacrifice 100 bulls. And you'd still say, that's not the equivalent of Andrew. We have a sacrifice that is far, far better than anything that they had. And that sacrifice, of course, is Jesus. Okay. The theme is to exhort the Jewish converts to stay faithful. So look at the just very quickly, a little bit of an idea of the outline of the book. And as I said, Ted and I are going to share the teaching responsibilities. So this is going to be kind of our organizing rubric for this book. Now, as we go through it, we'll break it out even more than this. But it does three things, three major divisions. I read one man who said this is a book that starts as an essay, in the middle turns into a sermon, and then when it gets to the end tells you what it means about the way that you're supposed to live. That's a really good description of the book of Hebrews. First, you start with the superiority of Christ. The superiority of the messenger. And he starts out by talking about the fact that God spoke to the fathers by the prophets. So don't ever think that when you talk about the Old Testament, that that wasn't God speaking. It was as much God speaking as what happens today. And I'm sure that the Jewish mom sitting around the Passover the Seder table would have said, "You're turning your back on what God said." And she'd be right. You know, he did say it. But we have a better messenger. We have a better message as well. Better than the angels. He's better than Moses. He's better than Aaron. His priesthood is superior to the priesthood of Aaron. So that's the superiority of Christ. That's what it takes to establish all of this. Then you have the superiority of the new covenant. It's made on better promises. It has a better sanctuary. And it has better sacrifices. And you know, when you think about it, he's not saying that the building that we meet in is better than the temple. That'd be foolish. Because it's not. If you look at the temple and you look at this meager building, we're not anything like the temple was. But it's still a better sanctuary. And then, at the end of the book, there are exhortations that are based on the superiority that we've already established. The superiority of Jesus, the superiority of the new covenant. Now, what does that mean? It means that we can draw near to God. And I was reading something that was written by C.S. Lewis. It's a book called The Four Loves. And he talks in that book about some people are kind of close to God, but they're never going to get any closer. And that is a concept that's kind of hard to wrap your head around. He said it's like being at the top of the Grand Canyon and looking over the edge, and it's exactly 1 mile down to the bottom. You're pretty close. That's impressive. But if you really want to get closer to the bottom of the canyon, you have to take this circuitous route Now, I think when Kim hiked to the bottom of the canyon, I think she said it was 10 miles. So you start out and you think, here I am, I'm 1 mile from God, and you're going that direction. But you're getting closer, because I'll never get any closer. You're going to get closer. I haven't figured out everything that there is about that illustration, but it kind of struck a chord with me. A lot of times we get satisfied with standing on the rim and saying, I'm pretty close to God, when we could get closer. But it's going to take a lot of effort. We're going to have to walk a lot further. So just kind of think about that. It enables us to run the race with endurance. If you think about everything that is built up in Jesus, that lets you run the race with endurance. You know, that's why he says, consider him that endured such, now I lost the word, such opposition from sinners against himself. You've not resisted unto blood like they did, like he did. Even if I was martyred, it wouldn't be like Jesus died. It's not. So we run with patience. And then there are a lot of miscellaneous things that are kind of at the end of the book that I'm not sure I know how to organize, but it's kind of like the book of Romans. You get to the end of the book and it's like, oh yeah, here are all those other things that I was going to talk about that I didn't talk about. So he lumps them all together. Questions, comments? That'll start Hebrews 1:1 next week. I think it's a fascinating book, and I'm really excited that we're going to be able to study it. Anything? Yeah, Bill?
It's been a moment ago, getting these souls in the Bible, the righteous, are surrounded by holy angels. Wherever two or more of us are gathered in his name, he's there. So he's here.
True.
The only way we can get closer is to get closer in our heart.
Yeah. Hey, it's just an illustration. It's just a C.S. Lewis illustration. And it don't put too much stock in it. It's just something to make you think. But you're right. He is inside of all of us. But we draw near with a true heart. Yeah.
I think your example makes me think of, you're supposed to have Jesus on your throne, on your heart, and it's like, okay, well, he's right here, but I'm still on my throne. So it's like, he's here, but he's not on the throne.
Yeah, that could be. That could be one way to look at it. Okay. Yeah, Bill.
I'd like to thank you and Ted for these evening classes we've had. Not being able to have them again until next spring.
Oh, we'll still have it.
Well, here.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss it. I appreciate you guys.
Okay.
And being here.
Well, we still have Zoom, so we, and I hate to say it this way, but for me, Zoom is a lot easier because I have hearing problems. And being in this big room is not very conducive to me hearing the comments that people are making. So I can hear better on Zoom. I can function better that way. And we could turn this into a lecture where I don't have to listen to what you say, but there doesn't seem to be as much value in that. I benefit greatly from hearing what everybody has to say. So, Romans next week, excuse me, Hebrews next week. Sunday morning, we're going to start talking about the book of Proverbs. And I'm following a kind of an outline that was suggested by a preacher by the name of Erwin Himmel. I don't know if you know him. He was in Florida for a long time. Then he moved to Alabama. And I think he moved to Colorado, didn't he? Does anybody know if he moved to Colorado? Anyway, he's written some really good stuff on the book of Proverbs. And so I'm going to be uploading that material for you. And we'll talk about that on Sunday mornings.